Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 14, the three modes of material nature, text 17, is that right? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, develop foolishness, madness, and illusion. Please repeat after me. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, develop foolishness, madness, and illusion. Purport. Since the present civilization is not very congenial to the living entities, Krishna consciousness is recommended. Through Krishna consciousness, society will develop the mode of goodness. When the mode of goodness is developed, people will see things as they are. In the mode of ignorance, people are just like animals and cannot see things clearly. In the mode of ignorance, for example, they do not see that by killing one animal, they are taking the chance of being killed by the same animal in the next life. Because people have no education in actual knowledge, they become irresponsible. To stop this irresponsibility, education for developing the mode of goodness of the people in general must be there. When they are actually educated in a mode of goodness, they will become sober, in full knowledge of things as they are. Then people will be very happy and prosperous. Even if the majority of the people aren't happy and prosperous, if a certain percentage of the population develops Krishna consciousness and becomes situated in the mode of goodness, then there is the possibility for peace and prosperity all over the world. Otherwise, if the world is devoted to the modes of passion and ignorance, there can be no peace or prosperity. In the mode of passion, people become greedy and their hankering for sense enjoyment has no limit. One can see that even if one has enough money and adequate arrangements for sense gratification, there is neither happiness nor peace of mind. That is not possible because one is situated in a mode of passion. If one wants happiness at all, his money will not help him. He has to elevate himself to the mode of goodness by practicing Krishna consciousness. When one is engaged in a mode of passion, not only is he mentally unhappy, but his profession and occupation are also very troublesome. He has to devise so many plans and schemes to acquire enough money to maintain his status quo. This is all miserable. In the mode of ignorance, people become mad. Being distressed by their circumstances, they take shelter of intoxication and thus they sink further into ignorance. Their future in life is very dark. So, in the material nature, there are three modes and different living entities are influenced by those modes. Those three modes are mode of goodness, mode of passion, and mode of ignorance. So, the characteristics of mode of goodness has been described here, that mode of goodness, in the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. Now, what is the real knowledge? The real knowledge is that this material nature is a perverted reflection of the spiritual nature. That is the real knowledge. The real knowledge is not to know about the material nature as such, but to become aware that this material nature is a reflection of the spiritual nature. And when one is situated in the mode of goodness, then only one can realize that, then only one can understand that. So, in the mode of goodness, a person is naturally detached from the material attachments. Generally, the living entities tend to become attached in the material nature. Like we have seen, I mean, our basic life used to be, like, was the life of attachment before we became devotees. Because we were in the mode of passion, we are influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance. We are not situated in the mode of goodness. So we also wanted to enjoy the material nature. We also did all kinds of abominable things. And why? Because we were not situated in knowledge. Because we were attached to the material nature, thinking that this material nature is the absolute reality. We thought that this is the real thing. The enjoyment is the material nature, is the goal of life, and we are just supposed to enjoy ourselves to the best of our ability. But when we tried to enjoy what happened in the process, more we tried to enjoy, more we suffered. And then when we came in contact with Krishna consciousness, when we came in contact with the devotees of Hare Krishna movement, when we read Prabhupada's books, then we realized that actually we are suffering because there is no enjoyment in this material nature. So if we want to get the real enjoyment, then we must become a devotee of Krishna. So that's how we accepted the process of Krishna consciousness. And of course, there may be some living entities, some devotees, those who came from the spiritual sky, their case is different. But generally, the conditioned living entities like us, we are conditioned basically, we are in ignorance. And from ignorance, by the mercy of the devotees, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have been elevated to the platform of Krishna consciousness. And coming in contact with the Krishna consciousness, we realize that how everything that we did in the material platform was just a waste of time. We tried to become happy, but actually there was no happiness. The way we are discussing this morning, that if one becomes very thirsty, and if he tries to get the water by running after a mirage, will his thirst ever quench? No. The same way, we are thirsty for enjoyment, but all our endeavors in the material platform never really satisfied that thirst or that hunger for enjoyment. Instead, we became more and more thirsty, more and more hungry, and more miserable. But when we came to Krishna consciousness, then we realized that actual happiness is in the spiritual sky. Actual happiness lies in becoming related to Krishna by becoming a devotee of Krishna. So Prabhupada is saying that generally everyone in the mode of ignorance and passion are trying to enjoy this material nature, but they end up becoming more and more miserable. But if one wants to be really happy, then he must be situated in the mode of goodness, because in the mode of goodness one can see what the reality is. And what the reality is? The reality is that this material nature that we are seeing with our eyes and perceiving with our senses is just a perverted reflection of the spiritual reality. And the spiritual reality is the reality where Krishna is the center. Reality and reflection has a very subtle difference. And the subtle difference is that reality is where Krishna is the center, and illusion is where we make ourselves the center. Now in the material nature, everyone, starting from an ant up to the greatest personality, everyone is thinking that he is the center. But if we try to become spiritually situated, if we want to transcend the material nature and come to the spiritual platform, then what we have to do? Instead of putting ourselves in the center, we have to put Krishna in the center. Then this material nature also will become spiritualized. If we put Krishna in the center, and if all our activities are done for the sake of Krishna, then we are situated in the spiritual platform. We may be in the most degraded condition according to the material standard. We may be in the most miserable state of existence. But by putting Krishna in the center, by doing everything for Krishna, we become spiritually situated. That is, we become perfectly happy. And there are so many examples, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had so many devotees. Those who are apparently very, very poor. Who can name one devotee who was very poor of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Very good. Kholabacha Sridhar was a very poor man. Kholabacha Sridhar, he used to sell banana leaf cups. Right? So banana leaves and, not banana leaves actually, banana bark. From banana bark he used to make cups. Right? And people used to use those cups for various things. In those days there was no use of aluminium and metal cups, stainless steel cups. Not even clay cups. They were, generally life was very simple in India, especially in Bengal. And the common people used to eat out of banana leaf. And if they need some cups, then they would get the cups out of banana bark. And so that's how they used to live. And Sridhar used to sell banana cups. And also he used to sell banana leaves. And he would also sell banana flour, mocha. That's banana flowers. When the banana comes out, then the edge of the flower remains there at the top of the banana bunch. And that is, people make vegetables out of that, sabji out of that. It's very tasty, very delicious. Whoever went to Mayapur, I'm sure he tasted that preparation. Not during the festival time, but when there is not so many devotees around, then these special preparations are made. And if you did not taste it as yet, when you come to Bengal next time, let me know. I will make arrangements. So, it's a very nice preparation. And so anyway, Sridhar used to sell those banana leaf cups and banana leaves, banana flour. So how much could one earn by just selling some banana cups? So his earning was very, very little. And with half, and although he was a very poor man, but with half of his earning every day, he would worship Ganges. Because the Ganges is coming from the lotus feet of the Lord. So as a token, as an expression of his love for the Lord, he used to worship Mother Ganga. Actually, that shows that devotees, pure devotees know that worshipping the devotee of the Lord is very pleasing to the Lord. So he used to worship Ganga with half of his earning. And with the half, with the remaining half, he used to maintain himself. And he actually had a very wonderful relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a young boy, he was very naughty. He was very naughty. He used to create all kinds of disturbance to everybody. The way Krishna as a child used to create disturbance, like he would go to the houses of the other cowherd folks and he would steal their butter, break their pots containing butter and yogurt and condensed milk, and then he would pinch the sleeping child of the gopis, of those cowherd folks. And then the child would wake up and start crying. And then Krishna would pass urine on the floor. And then when the mother would come running to see what happened, why the child was crying, then Krishna would run away. And while Krishna would run away, the gopi would see that it's Krishna. So they would get very angry with Krishna and complain to Mother Yashoda. So that's why Mother Yashoda tied Krishna up one day in the Damodar Leela. Of course, Mother Yashoda didn't believe at first. Mother Yashoda thought that, my Krishna is so sweet, so obedient, so why should Krishna steal butter and milk from other people's house? As if, and Mother Yashoda said, why Krishna will steal from your house? Is there any shortage of butter and yogurt and milk in my house? So she would not believe. She would, and these gopis would say that, if you don't believe us, then someday we'll catch your Krishna and then we'll bring him to your house, bring him to you, and then probably you'll believe us. So this was Krishna's pastimes, and actually one day this gopi caught Krishna and took him to Mother Yashoda. Anyway, it's another series of pastimes, but Mother Yashoda actually tied Krishna up one day, and that was the Damodar Leela that we all know. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also was very naughty when he was a child. He was also very, very naughty. Regarding the similar pastimes I remember of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at about 5 or 6 years old at that time. And at that time, Murari Gupta, that you all know, one associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was about 18, 19 years old. He was studying. And he was actually an impersonalist. Or not impersonalist, but he was a monist. He used to read all the impersonal scriptures and derive, impersonal conclusion that ultimately everything is Brahma. So one day Murari Gupta was a very learned scholar. So Murari Gupta was giving he was surrounded by his fellow men, and he was explaining to them Yoga Vashishta. And so they were walking, and Murari Gupta was throwing his hand and making his points. And then all of a sudden he heard some boys are laughing. He heard some laughter. So he turned around and he saw Nimai, 5, 6 year old Nimai. In India those days, young boys in 5, 6 years, they used to move around naked. And life was very simple. And also it's a hot country. So Nimai was a naked boy. And naked means he was wearing something, but his body was there. And he was walking down the road, surrounded by his friends. And he was imitating Murari Gupta's throwing hands and just all the gestures that Murari Gupta was doing. So Nimai was imitating that, and all his friends were laughing. So Murari Gupta, he got very angry. He thought that this son of Jagannath Mishra is such a rascal. But still he maintained his gravity, and he carried on giving lecture on impersonalism. So again he heard the laughter, and he saw that Nimai is imitating him. So he got very angry, and he started telling Nimai, "Nimai, you are such a rascal. Your father is such a saintly person, and you have become such a rascal in his family. It's such a disgrace to your whole family." So Murari Gupta was very angry and was chastising Nimai. So Nimai said, "Okay, Murari, I'll see you at noontime." Saying that, he went away with his friends. Then Murari Gupta, he was a bachelor. He was unmarried. So at noontime, he was taking his prasad. He just sat down to take his prasad. Then he heard someone calling him, "Murari." So he could understand that it was Nimai. So he didn't answer, he didn't say anything. And then he saw the Nimai standing right in front of him. And Still he wouldn't lift up his head and look at Nimai. And then Nimai started passing urine on his plate. And Nimai said that, Murari, who says that God is formless? Who thinks that God is formless? I pass urine in his plate. So Muraregupta got very angry. He just got up, and but then he felt that. But then Nimai ran away from there, and he felt that he was not actually feeling anger. It was instead of anger, he was feeling a tremendous love for this little boy, and instead of this little boy Nimai, he began to see baby Krishna, little Krishna. Wherever he was looking, he was seeing Krishna all around him. Instead of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was seeing Krishna. And so he ran after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, ran after Nimai, and came. And Nimai, in the meantime, ran into his house, just got into his mother's lap, and hid himself under the edge of his mother's cloth. Like the sari has the edge, and Nimai was hiding on his mother's lap. And Muraregupta came and started offering obeisances to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Jagannath Mishra saw that and said, Murari, what are you doing? Why are you offering obeisances to this little child? Because that will be inauspicious for him. It will cause him, bring him misfortune. Because if a superior offers obeisances to an inferior, it is not good for him. So then Muraregupta told Jagannath Mishra, Jagannath Mishra, you do not know who has come in your house as your son. But I'm sure in due course of time you'll be able to recognize him. So this way Mahaprabhu also used to perform his naughty pastimes when he was very young. I think at that time he was only about 3 or 4 years old, just a little child. And because 5 years is quite old actually. That's the time when one goes to Gurukul. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't go to school at that time. It was much before he went to school. So he must have been about 3 or 4 years old. And also Mahaprabhu used to have some wonderful exchanges with Kolabaka Sridhar. Like Sridhar was a poor man and he used to sell banana leaves and banana flowers, and also he used to sell some pumpkins sometimes. So sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go to the market to buy, and he would take away things from Sridhar. He would take away, someday he would take away banana flowers from his shop, or someday he would take away the pumpkins from his shop. And then Sridhar would run after him. He would take the thing from his shop and run. And then Kolabaja Sridhar would run after him and catch him and try to take it away from him. And Mahaprabhu would try to grab it out of his hand. And so this way there would be a tussle. And Sridhar said that, you are such a rascal. You are just stealing my things from my shop. And Mahaprabhu would say that, well, you wanted to offer it to me. I'm not stealing. You have been always offering everything to me. And now you are such a, you are calling me a rascal, but you are actually a liar. So this is how they would have exchanges. And there's a saying that Bhakter Anno Prabhu Kari Kari Khai. The offering of the devotees, the Lord forcefully takes away. Forcibly takes the offering of his devotees. So that Sridhar, he was such a poor man, but he never really wanted to have any opulence. It's not that he wanted to have didn't want opulence. I mean, he wanted to become rich. No, he didn't want to become rich. He was just happy being the way he was. And when Mahaprabhu showed his form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the house of Srivash Thakur, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told, bring Srivash, bring Sridhar. So devotees went and called Sridhar. And Mahaprabhu said, Sridhar, tell me what you want. I'll give you anything you want. You have been such a nice devotee all along. And Sridhar said, my Lord, I don't want anything else. He said, I'm perfectly happy. I'm happy just being your devotee. And I consider this poverty is actually a benediction for me. So please, do not take away my poverty. Where people say that, do not take away my wealth, but Sridhar is saying that, please do not take away my poverty. As if poverty, as if his poverty is his asset. And actually to a devotee, the poverty is the asset. Because when he's poor, then he can think of the Lord even more. Like Kunti Devi, he was when Krishna was leaving. After the battle of Kurukshetra was fought, Pandavas were reinstated in the kingdom, and Krishna was leaving for Dwarka. Kunti Devi was praying to Krishna, Krishna, all this while, when we are in distress, you are always with us, we always remember you. But now that we have become opulent, we have got all the wealth and got back our kingdom, now I am afraid that we may forget you. So please give us back those days of distress. Because when you are in distress, then we can remember you so nicely. So that is the mood of a devotee, and that's why a devotee voluntarily accepts poverty. And Kholabecha Sridhar is one such wonderful example. And many other devotees were poor. Srivash Thakur was poor. Advaita Acharya was quite poor. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself became a sannyasi. And sannyasis are, sannyas order is the height of renunciation. It's total renunciation. Nothing is there. He doesn't have anything. He eats when somebody offers him something. If somebody doesn't offer him something, he just starves. And many of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in future also were like that. But is it that they didn't want, is it that they are leading a miserable life? No. They are leading a very happy life. Like for instance, we know that there are yogis sitting in the caves in Himalaya, high up in the mountains, 22,000 feet high altitude. Constantly covered, that area is completely covered with, not only by snow, but ice. The ice never melts there. So there these people are staying, meditating on the Lord. Now apparently they are very poor, right? They do not even have anything to eat. They just breathe, and once in a while they may eat something. It's like that. Now if you go and tell him that, why don't you come to Germany, I'll give you a job in my office for 5,000 Deutschmarks. Do you think he'll be interested? No. Because he's already situated on a platform that is transcendental to all this material consideration. So if a yogi is in such condition, then one can well imagine how elevated the position of a devotee is. A yogi is trying to develop a relationship with Krishna, trying to understand Krishna by his intellect. Whereas a devotee is already situated in his relationship with Krishna, so why should he want anything from this material nature? Like Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was another example. He would just live on the bank of the Ganges. Didn't have any place to stay. When it would rain, he would go underneath the upturned boat. The boats are turned upside down sometimes. Because in the rainy season, if the boat is kept straight, then the rain water would just accumulate and that would make the boat sink. Or it is a hassle to get the water out from the boat. So that's why they turn the boat upside down when the boat, they are not using the boat. So Gaurkishodar Babaji Maharaj would just crawl into this upturned boat and he would just spend the night or when it would rain. He didn't even have any place to live. He had, he would wear the cloth that would come floating by in the river, or some dead body would come floating and, or people would throw away the cloths of. That was how elevated his position was, and so detached. He was not at all dependent on anything in the material nature. Madhavendra Puri, he was so renounced that Madhavendra Puri would not even beg anything from anybody. If somebody offered him something, then he would eat. Otherwise, he would starve. Like when he went to Vrindavan, he was just sitting in the forest. And then Krishna came with a pot of milk and said, Swamiji, please drink this milk. So he asked, how did you know that I was here and how do you know that I needed milk? So he said, well, the ladies in the village saw you coming this way. So they sent me with a pot of milk. And he said, you drink the milk and then later on I would come and take a pot. But that boy didn't come. And the milk was tasting so divine. So he could understand that actually this is Krishna who came and gave him the milk. And what to talk about giving him milk? Krishna actually stole condensed milk for Madhavendra Puri. When Madhavendra Puri went to the temple of Ramuna, Gopinath temple was very famous for its condensed milk, kheer. And Madhavendra Puri thought if he got the taste of this condensed milk, then he could understand how the taste was and then he could offer it to his Gopal. But then he thought, oh, this is greed. This is lust in my heart. I am desiring something for my sense enjoyment. And so he ran away. He left that place immediately and went away, far away from the village, into the marketplace. In India, the marketplace are away from the village where nobody lives at night. But that night, Gopinath stole a pot of condensed milk and kept it hidden and behind his cloth. And then he appeared to the pujari in a dream and told the pujari that there is Madhav Puri in such and such place, so you please go and give him this pot of kheer. So then the pujari said, well, I mean the kheer is all finished. All the kheer has been distributed. Then he said, no, there is one pot still there, it's behind my cloth. So the pujari took a bath, came into the temple, and he saw that true, there was one pot hidden behind Krishna's cloth. And so he could understand that Krishna actually stole that pot of kheer. That's why his name became Kheer Chor Gopinath. So this way, the Lord even steals for his devotees. Devotees do not want anything, but the Lord wants to give him everything. At least the Lord takes care of him. So we must understand that the devotees voluntarily accept poverty because poverty, they are not actually poor. They are not poor. They are actually the richest people. Apparently, in the eyes of the materialistic people, it may seem that they are poor. But they are not poor. They are the richest people. Devotees are the richest person. But the karmis are poor. The materialistic people are poor. One becomes poor or rich not by the amount of money he has, but the outlook that he has. There may be a millionaire, but he may be very poor in heart. But there may be somebody who has nothing to claim as his own, but he may be the richest person in heart. Like one of the richest men in India is Birla. He is very, very rich. And when we went to meet him, the first thing he said, actually I don't have any money to donate. He doesn't have any money. He said that he doesn't have any money. So that means what? I mean, he's so poor in heart. Actually, so what's the point in having that kind of wealth? So it's just greed. These people, due to their karma, they have some money. But actually they are not rich. Devotees are the real rich people. And that's why. And why they are rich? Because they are serving the Lord. Because they know that they are the children of the richest person. So if the father is rich, then automatically the son is rich too. Although the son may not want any opulence for himself. Like, our thing is that why should we want anything for ourselves? Our father has given us everything. Krishna is taking care of us. And we are actually very rich. I mean, others also can understand. They say that Hare Krishna is very rich. And we also say, yes, we are very rich. Because we are serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we do not have any scarcity. We have everything. Although we are renounced ourselves, but anything that we need for our Father's service, for Krishna's service, is always provided with. There is no scarcity for the devotee. Of course, when there is some scarcity, then we have to understand that that's Krishna's mercy. Krishna gives us, and then sometimes Krishna takes away from us also. Krishna says, Jashaham anugrinhami horishet adhanam shanai. Whoever I bestow my mercy upon, I take away all that he has. Here all that he has means all that he has as his material attachment. That Krishna takes away. Krishna doesn't take away our spiritual attachment. Instead, Krishna increases our spiritual attachment. Like sometimes Krishna disappears from the eyes of his devotees. But that is not that Krishna is going away from the devotees. But this is just to increase the love of his devotees. Rupa Goswami says, Ahe Reva Gotir Premna. The movement of love is like the movement of a snake. Snake doesn't move in a straight line. The snake moves it's backward and forward. Snake's movement actually is backward and forward. It moves forward, but sometimes it goes back to move forward. And it's not straight, but it's in a carved movement. Okay? Ponkil. The Sanskrit word for that is ponkil gotil. Winding. Yeah, right. That's the word. Snake's movement is winding movement. And Rupa Goswami is saying that the movement of love is also like that. The love does not move in straight line. Love moves in a backward and forward movement. It's moving forward, but sometimes there is some backward movement. So that's why sometimes there are fights between gopis and Krishna. Sometimes Krishna disappears from the gopi association. And gopis curse Krishna. That rascal, next time he comes to us, we are not going to speak to him. And things like, I mean, this way they chastise Krishna. And it happens. When Krishna comes, they refuse to speak to him. Radharani tells the friend that tell him to go away. I don't want to see his face. But then Krishna comes to pacify Radharani. So this is how the movement of love is konkil, is ahirebo gotir prema, like the movement of a serpent. So Krishna sometimes may take away, or Krishna sometimes may put us in great danger, but we have to understand that all these are actually to increase our love for Him. And that's what happens when devotees are in danger. They remember Krishna even more. Like the Pandavas are the examples. Like people may ask, well, Pandavas, often they ask actually. Less intelligent people ask. The Pandavas were the devotees of Krishna. But why? They suffered so much. Whereas the Kauravas, they were non-devotees, but they were enjoying so much. But actually the problem is that they do not know what is the real enjoyment and what is the real suffering. In their eyes, the Kauravas were enjoying because they were living in a palace and they were enjoying the kingdom and so on and so forth. And the Pandavas, they were moving in the forest, hiding from their enemies and so on and so forth. But Pandavas, although they were in the forest, they were with Krishna and they were with the devotees. So that's why, although they were in the forest, they were enjoying. But the Kauravas, although they were living in the palace, they were in great anxiety all the time. So the same way we can also see, like some people may be living in great opulence, but his life may be very, very miserable. But the devotees, although they do not have anything, but they are enjoying. Is it true? Am I correct that every devotee is enjoying? Is there anybody who is not enjoying? Please raise your hand. Don't be afraid or don't be shy. So everyone is, it seems that everyone is enjoying. But do other people think that you are enjoying? They think that, oh, my son is so, or my son or my daughter is so miserable. They just sleep on the floor, they don't even have beds to sleep on. And they eat only vegetarians, right? They eat some only vegetarian food, and they don't wear nice clothes. They wear all kinds of strange clothes supplied from India. They don't wear any ornaments. They don't go to discotheques. They don't go to the movies. They don't go to the restaurants. So they think that our life is so terrible. And on top of everything, they get up every day at 3:30 in the morning. They don't even sleep. So what kind of life they are leading? But actually for them it is very difficult to understand what kind of life we are leading. Our life is so wonderful that that if somebody comes and tells us that, okay, I'll give you $1,000,000, you give up Krishna consciousness. And a fixed-up devotee will not accept that offer. And actually that should be the taste. Like we should constantly ask ourselves, now if Maya gives us something, am I going to give up Krishna consciousness for that? That is the way we always must check ourselves. Like what if somebody gives me so much money? What am I going to do with that money? Am I going to use it in Krishna's service or in my service? Then if we are willing to sacrifice so much, then why not sacrifice everything? Why not offer everything to Krishna? Whatever I have today, why everything should not be offered to Krishna? Why should I hold anything back for me? So that is how we must educate ourselves to become a devotee. Prabhupada often said that Krishna does not see how much you gave him. Krishna doesn't actually see how much you gave him. Now what does Krishna see? Brihadbhana? Right. Krishna sees how much one is holding for himself. Somebody may give $1,000,000, but Krishna may not be very happy with him. But somebody may give 10 pfennigs, But Krishna may be very happy with him. If a person who has 10 fennings, if he gives him, give that to Krishna, then Krishna will be very, very pleased with him. But if a man has $10 million and if he gives 1 million and keeps 9 million for him, then this 10 fennings will be more valuable to Krishna than this $1 million. So Krishna doesn't see the amount, Krishna sees the intensity. What is the intensity of our love? How deeply we love him? That's what he wants to see. Okay, I should stop now. I kind of drifted away from the main topic. That happens sometimes. I'm sure everybody understands that how one cannot become a devotee in the mode of ignorance and passion. In Bhagavatam it says, Tada rajas tamo bhava kamo lobho dayashchaje cheto etoi rana vidvam sthitam shakti prasidhati. From rajas tamo bhava, from the mode of ignorance and passion, calm, lust, greed, anger, etc. develop. Kamo lobho dayashchaje. But cheto etoi rana vidvam sthitam shakti prasidhati. But when one is situated in the mode of goodness, then only he becomes qualified or he becomes able to render devotional service. Evam prasanna manasho bhagavat bhakti yogata bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate bhiddate hridaya granthi chiddante sarva samshaya kshiyante chasya karmani Vrishta evat manishare. It's a very scientific process. We have to be situated in a mode of goodness, and then only we'll be able to render devotional service. And then our heart will become completely satisfied. Evam prasanna manasya. Our heart becomes completely satisfied by being situated in a mode of goodness and by rendering devotional service. And then what happens when you begin to render devotional service? Then all the knots in our hearts become loosened. Bhiddate hridaya granthi, chiddante sarva samshaya, and all the doubts are cut into pieces. All the doubts are removed. And then we begin to see the Lord in the heart. We must try to become at least situated in the mode of goodness. Get rid of all these attachments. After all, we don't have anything to gain in the material platform. What do we have to gain? We have understood that this is illusory. We understood that this material nature is an illusion. So why run after the illusion? Why, if we have realized that it's an illusion, then why don't we act on that realization? Why don't we give up all our attachments for the sake of Krishna consciousness? Then only our mission, our life's mission will be successful. And actually devotees are doing that. Devotees are doing that. They are, for the sake of Krishna, you all are accepting so much difficulties. In such difficult condition, you are preaching Krishna consciousness, you are distributing Prabhupada's books, and I'm sure Krishna is rewarding you and Krishna will reward you for the sacrifice that you made for him. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Yes. Prasadam in the sense, yeah. No, I didn't. I meant prasad. I said prasad because that's the expression we use. At that time, he didn't offer it to Krishna. Right? He was an impersonal. Right? But in our eyes, according to our understanding, every food is actually Krishna's prasad. Right? Because Krishna has mercifully gave them for human beings. Right? So everything is Krishna prasad in according to our understanding. But he did not offer it to Krishna at that time. So it was not a prasad at that time. He was eating his karma. Right? I have to find out. I don't exactly remember now. Yeah, the question was, who was Murari Gupta in Krishna Leela? And the answer is, I do not know. But I can try to find out. Yes. Not what, but how much. How much one gives, but how much one is holding for himself. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's true. There are different ways of looking at it. Right? Prabhupada sometimes said that. Right? This is just to remind us that don't think that you have done a great service. But instead you realize that how much more you haven't done for Krishna. Right? How much you are holding for Krishna still now. Holding from Krishna now. Right? And the understanding is, if you give 1% to Krishna, then Krishna will give you 1%. Right? If you give 50% to Krishna, then Krishna will give you 50% of himself. But if you give 100% to Krishna, then how much Krishna will give you? 100%. So if you want to get Krishna, then offer yourself completely to Krishna. Right? So that is the understanding. We have to, only when we offer everything of us to Krishna, not even everything of ours, but everything of us, even my body, my mind, my intelligence, right? And finally, my spirit. So when you offer our souls to Krishna, then Krishna gives him his soul to us. Right? Yes. Yes. When one comes to the mode of goodness, then he at least begins the devotional service. Devotional service begins in the mode of goodness. You cannot actually render devotional service in the mode of passion and ignorance. Right? So it begins in the mode of goodness, but as you develop your devotional service, then you transcend the mode of goodness and come to the Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness.
Because we see in our movement, And until Prabhupada said, someone who engages in Vipassana meditation, can be
considered. Different devotees may be, you know, in a different mixed state, right? Like, as you said, mixed with mode of ignorance, mixed with mode of passion, or even mixed with mode of goodness. But if they do not commit Vaishnava aparadha, then they will, you know, gradually transcend the modes and come to the pure devotional platform, right? Like, also another consideration is the artho arthartha jigyasu and jnani. These four people approach the path of devotion being motivated by some material. All these considerations are material considerations. But then it is said that they become devotees. They become free from these material inhibitions and become situated in the transcendental platform, provided they do not commit Vaishnava aparadha or Nama aparadha. Right? Of course, Nama aparadha actually includes Vaishnava aparadha. So ultimately it is the Nama aparadha, offense to the holy names. But out of all of these offenses, the most dangerous one is the offenses to a Vaishnava or to the Vaishnavas. And it is, we can see that in our society, this Vaishnava aparadha actually becomes manifest in the form of leaving the society. Because when one leaves ISKCON, then actually he leaves his opportunity to become a devotee or continue his devotional service. So that's why Prabhupada gave the instruction that no matter whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. I mean, I personally consider that's the most important instruction that Prabhupada gave. Actually, I was with Prabhupada for last 9 months, right? 9 or 10 months. And at that time, the three most instructions that I got from Prabhupada, or I heard Prabhupada telling, you know, emphasizing, the first one is, no matter whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. Then the second one is, your love for me will be shown how you cooperate with each other. And the third is, that GBC is the ultimate managing authority of ISKCON. So these are the three most important instructions. And the first one, as I said, is no matter whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. And now I'm seeing why Prabhupada put so much emphasis on that instruction. Because when one leaves ISKCON, he just drifts away from spiritual life. No matter how strong he may be. Like we've seen big, big sannyasis, big, big leaders, very powerful people. But as soon as they left ISKCON, they immediately dried out. But if one stays in ISKCON, then he is safe. Then, even there may be some aparadhas here and there, but he'll rectify. Like, in our society we can see that how easily we can become free from the offenses. Like, if we commit some offense to somebody, we can just go to him and say, Prabhu, please forgive me for my offenses. And please accept my humble obeisances, right? And we just offer obeisances, and the other person also says, oh Prabhu, no, there was no offense. I didn't take any offense. So, bancha kalputa rupascha. Like, we exchange obeisances and then we embrace and we become friends, right? But if we leave ISKCON, then what is the chance of becoming free from the offenses?